Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This week, we're bringing you a special episode dedicated to May Day and issues around labor across Canada.
This episode of Groundwire was produced at community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabe Aki, homeland of the Métis, and the traditional territory of the Nahiwak and Nakota. We're your hosts. My name is Alin.
And I'm Jeremy Morantz. In this episode, we'll hear audio from the recent May Day mobilization both in Winnipeg and in Montreal.
You'll also hear a feature focusing on union interactions with Indigenous peoples affected by extractive industries. And following the defeat of the labor-friendly NDP in Manitoba, we'll hear one labor organization's concerns about the return to power of the Progressive Conservatives, now under the leadership of former Harper Cabinet Minister Brian Pallister.
Finally, producing station CKUW provides us with a community radio report about its taking ownership of Stylus, a bi-monthly local music magazine which prints the station's program listings.
But first, here are the headlines.
The first headline comes to us from Scott Price of radio station CKUW. Workers at the Crown Royal plant in Gimli, Manitoba have agreed to end a 7-week strike with Diageo, a British multinational alcoholic beverage company, on April the 23rd by a vote of 56%. Workers returned to work on April the 25th. The strike began on March the 4th when the 52 workers who make the world famous Crown Royal whiskey voted 100% in favor of strike action. The main issues during the strike were wages, pension, vacation, benefits, and sick time. All outstanding issues will be dealt with by a third-party arbitrator. Details of the agreement will be provided once the arbitrator has ruled their decision.
Last month, from April 8th to the 10th, the federal NDP convention was held in Edmonton, Alberta, and high on everyone's mind was the future of the leadership of the party. The convention decided to let go of Tom Mulcair and to choose a new leader within 2 years. Also discussed at the convention was the LEAP manifesto, created by Naomi Klein and Avi Lewis during the federal election, calling for a radical restructuring of the economy as Canada swiftly moves towards ending the use of fossil fuels. Though the manifesto did not go over well with Alberta NDP Premier Rachel Notley, LEAP supporters came to the convention hoping to pass a resolution, but in the end the delegates approved only a watered-down version of the resolution. Mick Sweetman of CJRU 1280 talks to Gordon Laxer, author of After the Sands, Energy and Environmental Security for Canada, about the LEAP manifesto and jobs in Alberta.
The LEAP manifesto outlines how Canada has to move to a low-carbon society, climate justice, taking into account First Nations perspectives, and they've really adopted in principle the idea that Canada has to move to a low-carbon society, has to stop pipelines, and has to really eliminate the fossil fuels that we produce in this country and consume.
How would you address the concerns that people in Alberta have with this? Is it going to really damage the economy if these steps are taken?
A unit of carbon energy saved creates more jobs than a unit of carbon energy dug up, emitted, and burned. You get a lot more jobs in construction. You get 16 times as many jobs per $1 million invested in construction than you do in the oil and gas industry. Oil and gas doesn't produce many jobs, very capital intensive. So if you retrofit all buildings, you build a high-speed train between Calgary and Edmonton, you do district heating, you do LRT. These kind of things create way more jobs than the direct jobs from oil and gas production. And Alberta is going to have to move this way because the world is no longer going to be buying their products. And this should really be seen, the downturn in the oil industry should be seen as the start of the move from Alberta and Canada away from carbon fuels.
That's it for headlines. We'll be right back after this.
Soaked through your shoes and your side.
You just heard Europe by Mulligrab off their recent album, Soft Grunge. They will be performing in Red Deer on May 18th and Edmonton on May 19th.
Now it's time for our feature stories. Communities across Canada and around the world celebrated International Workers' Day on Sunday, May 1st with rallies, parades, and special events. In Winnipeg, around 200 turned out for the annual event, which began with speeches in front of City Hall and was followed by a march through the downtown area. Here is a collection of voices from that event provided by CKUW News reporters Stefan Doucette and Michael Welch.
These actions would get the full support of every union in that building, except if that action was targeting an environmental practice of a company or industry that employed union labor. There is a very sharp and distinct line drawn between what could be done to protect and save the natural environment when it butted up against saving and protecting jobs. There was a false dichotomy created between the natural and human environments. But the natural and human environments are not separate entities. Humans exist in the natural environment. It is where we work and live and play. It provides us with the elements we need for our physical survival, and it provides for our spiritual and emotional nourishment. We can no longer allow that false dichotomy to divide us. Our common enemy, who has always been our common enemy, is an economic system that at every opportunity will try to make you work longer hours at less pay and then convince you to be happy simply for having a job.
That was Winnipegger Harold Schuster speaking at the May Day March in Winnipeg. CKUW News Director Michael Welch spoke with some of the people in the crowd about what they see as the greatest challenges for organized labor in 2016. Here's what a few of them had to say, starting with Flor Marcelino, newly re-elected MLA for the NDP.
The challenges are so many. I think what we should do now is regroup, renew, rebuild. It's a formidable challenge we're facing. So every body, every member counts. We have to be passionate in those who are members of whatever labor groups have to be passionate, have to be actively participating in their groups and in the movement. So we together, when we face the opponent, will be strong and will be victorious.
Stan Rozowski, a Winnipeg worker, shared some of his thoughts.
It seems that there's a lot of antipathy towards labor from both the newly elected government in Manitoba, and there was certainly with the previous federal government. I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding of what labor is and represents, what they've done for the workers of today, and their role in our current society. There's lots of issues and lots of difficulties, lots of challenges for labor right now, as there always have been.
Dennis Lewicki, former trade unionist and former executive director of the Social Planning Council, had some ideas about how trade unions can adapt to meet these new challenges.
The biggest challenge for trade unionists is to see the changes in our society as an opportunity and not as a threat. I think too many people are afraid of change. They see things like social media and the internationalization of trade and globalization. They see all these as threats, and they are threats. But as activists, unionists, whatever, we've got to see the opportunities in these changes so that we can continue to serve the working people of Canada. You know, the other thing that seems to me, and May Day is a really great time to think about this and reflect, but you know, the important thing is now is how much people want to connect. You know, it's the new relationships that we've got to nurture and support. You know, my granddaughter this weekend taught me something. She's constantly sending me videos on Facebook and on WhatsApp, you know, and she wants to connect. She does not just want to be a kid in school. You know, she's 10 years old and she's already very sophisticated. But I see that in older people and younger people. There's a desire for connection now. And our society has fragmented people, families, communities, and we've got to bring people together. And I think that's going to be the challenge for the next decade or so. I hope the political party that can see that, you know, will take on the values of social justice and eliminating poverty and dealing with inequality, but it's through connections that it's going to happen, I think.
Chloe Baruffa from CKUT in Montreal covered the anti-capitalist May Day demonstration in that city. She provided the following audio.
This past Sunday, May 1st, the Convergence des Luttes Anticapitalistes, CLAC, or as it is known in English, the Anti-Capitalist Convergence, organized an anti-capitalist protest in downtown Montreal. The purpose of the social mobilization was to disrupt commercial activities in the city and to commemorate combated tradition of International Workers' Day. The protest started peacefully, but after an hour, the tensions between protesters and police escalated. Once having arrived at St. Catherine Street West, smoke bombs were launched in the direction of the police, and protesters smashed two building windows. At 4 o'clock, the Montreal Police Service ordered the dispersion of the protest for reasons of criminal acts. Even though there was acts of violence on the part of the protesters, it is important to be aware of the disproportionate police presence as well as their defensiveness. The police, like usual, are protecting the spaces and symbols that they are supposed to protect. And certainly, they were present in large numbers from the very start of the protest. And they are doing a lot with their presence and their attitude, and it's very intimidating. And additionally, they used chemical arms to disperse people.
Et évidemment, ils ont utilisé des armes chimiques pour disperser les gens.
Ben, ce que je vois, c'est une...
What I see is about 60 anti-riot and police on bikes, and they are walking the line of the peaceful and democratic protest who have the right to take to the streets. The protest organized by CLAC was much more than only a confrontation between police and protesters. Walking alongside the hundreds of people, I realized each one of them had their own reasons for supporting the anti-capitalist movement. We are together. We are here as a family. We were at the first demonstration with the unions, and then we decided to follow here because it's the anti-capitalist side that is really important in our hearts. I don't know if you saw our placard. Can you read your placard for me? It says, "My life is not for sale." And how does that affect you in your life? Seeing as how my mother is at school and she doesn't have time sometimes to play with me, and it's annoying. We are Kurdish women. It's the capitalists who have destroyed the Middle East. Stop this massacre of our innocent people. Stop the massacre. So that is why we are here, as Kurdish women. This is Chloe Baruffa reporting for CKUT Radio in Montreal, 90.3 FM.
Groundwire's Ame Salma Rahemtula provided the translation for the report you just heard.
With concerns about extractive industries threatening indigenous communities, the question of how unions engage with First Nations is becoming more urgent. CKUW contributor Stefan Doucette broaches this topic in the following report.
Happy International Workers' Day, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. Thank you very much for coming out on this beautiful day. It's finally nice to see some summer weather that we hope will hang around. And also great to see a good crowd out today. My name is Dave Sauer, the president of the Winnipeg Labour Council, and we are proud to be organizing and here in solidarity with you today. As you can tell behind me, there is a banner that is talking about our theme this year, and it's Protect the Human and Natural Environments. And I think it's very important that we talk about ecology and the environment and how it affects us as working people. If you take a look at most major industrial sites, they're very often located in portions of the cities in North America where a lot of poverty is located. And poor workers are very often the first victims of environmental damage. And if I can quote past CLC President Ken Giorgetti talking about how you cannot invest in a dead planet, and we need to start seriously looking at the impact we are having on the environment.
That was David Sauer of the Winnipeg Labour Council opening the May Day March in Winnipeg. About 2 months ago, Leah Gazan, an Indigenous professor in the Faculty of Education at the University of Winnipeg, spoke at the Mel Myers Labour Conference on a panel entitled Union Engagement of Indigenous Peoples. At a time where austerity politicians are pushing for ever-increasing resource extraction and often using job creation as a hook, it's so important to talk about how labor organizations can work in solidarity with Indigenous communities. So I'm here with Leah Gazan. You spoke at the Mel Myers Labor Conference on a panel entitled Union Engagement of Indigenous Peoples. Can you give us a quick rundown of your contribution there?
Well, basically, I was asked to speak on how unions could better engage and work with Indigenous populations. And that was basically why I was asked in the first place to go and speak. Mm-hmm. And so what I focused my talk on was the relationship between unions and workers and resource extraction industries in communities where unions often represent the workers. It's always been contentious, resource extraction, mining within our communities. For a number of reasons. One of the reasons is because it causes a lot of damage to the earth. But one thing that's not talked about is it also brings in a lot of workers where we see higher rates of violence, higher rates of sexual exploitation, sex trafficking of our young women and girls, as witnessed in places like Fort McMurray and some of the Lakota nations like Cheyenne River, which is my stateside community, where we see increased rates of violence against Indigenous women and girls. So in terms of unions, what I was talking about is if the whole purpose of unions is to protect the human rights of workers, shouldn't they extend the concern for human rights for the very people who live in the communities where they're finding economic benefit, including women and girls that are often not beneficiaries of the economic or the revenues generated from resource extraction, but often experience increased rates of violence and abuse?
Right, so there's this sort of gap, I guess, in terms of the way that unions represent workers but are sort of forgetting about the context within which these projects are taking place, or also there's a lack of dialogue with the community, or there's a lack of accountability.
Well, you know, I don't want to paint all unions with the same brush.
Sure.
And I also want to put a disclaimer in here. I absolutely support the work of unions, and I think it's important that we don't undermine the important roles unions play in protecting workers. That's absolutely essential.
Mm-hmm.
What I was calling on, though, is to reflect on human rights and to see how unions can get involved in ensuring a support for all human rights for all people. And what I was saying is that a lot of the workers that come into these communities, although they have protection from unions, that maybe unions can get more involved in ensuring that their workers have the appropriate training so they're safe in the communities that they're working with.
The international working class shall be the human race.
Thank you, Roy.
The Progressive Conservative Party of Manitoba have returned to power for the first time in almost 17 years. The voices of labor have begun to express some concern about what this new government might mean for the workers and their families. CKUW's Michael Welch had the chance to meet with one of these voices during a live CKUW broadcast recently.
The new Progressive Conservative government brings with it a number of stated policies and a track record suggesting hostility toward the labor sector. For example, starting in 1992, the conservative government of Gary Filmon did away with a system that would allow a union to represent a bargaining unit if 55% or more of members of that unit had signed up as members. As a result, disputes had to be settled through secret ballots, opening the door to intimidation tactics and thereby frustrating union organizing. Flash forward to April of 2016, newly elected Premier Brian Pallister plans to get rid of the card check system reinstalled under the New Democrats. Not a good sign, according to Kevin Rebeck. He's the president of the Manitoba Federation of Labor.
I got involved in the labor movement in the early 90s, and it was a time of picket lines and, you know, a time that there were a lot of demos and a lot of actions being taken by progressive groups that wanted to make sure that their voices were heard. And it was a hard thing to get your voice heard, and you met good people often in fight back campaigns. So I hope that we're not going back to that time. We've got a new cabinet, newly appointed. There's some gaps there that we're still sorting through who's responsible for what, and we need to know who's responsible for health and safety and employment standards and the Labor Relations Act and figure out how to work with that.
Another concern is the PC government's promise to join something called the New West Partnership. This agreement is billed as an economic powerhouse linking the three westernmost provinces into an interprovincial barrier-free trade and investment market. Rebeck sees this as a free trade deal for the provinces and has concerns about what this might mean for workers and ordinary Manitobans.
These trade deals look at things through purely a business lens. And what they do is they allow businesses to sue governments for potential profit losses. And that means that we look at the lowest common denominator in terms of wages, in terms of health and safety standards, in terms of you know, what could be an impediment if you want to have some local procurement policies or you want to have training initiatives for your Indigenous workforce. That could be seen as a barrier, and there may be a price to pay if a government wants to govern and provide some of those services or opportunities for its citizens.
In the event the MFL and other labor organizations fail to convince the Pallister government to back away from an all-out attack on the House of Labor, what can be done?
Plan A is certainly, and we've written a letter to the Premier, and now I have some new ministers to write letters to, and there's issues we want to meet with them and lobby them on. But we're also talking amongst ourselves in the labor movement and community allies, saying if some of these things, like a New West Partnership, is pursued, or if we're moving away from project to labor agreements, what can we do? What should we do? How do we engage and educate the public? How do we let them know what's really at stake? Because I think your question's a good one. People don't always understand or know. What do these things mean, and what will they mean to them and their families and their workplace? So we're going to have to do a better job of educating the public and working with them to make them care and let their politicians know what matters.
For CKUW on Occupied Anishinaabe Aki and Homeland of the Métis Peoples, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Now it's time for our community radio report. As this week's producing station, CKUW introduces listeners to a Winnipeg music magazine with which CKUW has had a close connection for more than two decades. CKUW News Director Michael Welch brings us the details.
University of Winnipeg-based radio station CKUW has had a close and friendly relationship with a certain bi-monthly print publication known as Stylus Magazine, going back to before CKUW occupied a position on the FM dial. In fact, CKUW's support for the magazine was so strong that in 2015, when Stylus was about to lose its major funding source, the radio station made the decision to take over ownership itself. I recently got in touch with two colleagues very much involved in fostering this unique print organ to learn more about this mutually beneficial relationship.
I'm Rob Schmidt. I'm the station manager here at CKUW 95.9 FM.
I'm Gil Carroll. I'm the editor of Stylus Magazine here at University of Winnipeg.
What makes Stylus so special and precious to CKUW?
It serves as a platform for new and emerging writers to write about music in a creative way or highlight bands or artists that they think deserve attention that wouldn't otherwise get it in sort of a mainstream music outlet. And it also serves as CKUW's program guide.
I know that there are folks that have come to the University of Winnipeg as students because they picked up Stylus magazine when they were teenagers and thought that it was exciting and a great project of the university. I know that some of those students have then gone on to become hosts on CKUW and produce radio shows. And so I think, you know, that connection. I know there's bands that have been featured in Stylus magazine and found that to be very effective.
It's also great for people who want to work on their writing and their journalism. Gives them tons of experience interviewing and writing reviews in a critical way. And it's also creates a sense of community as well. There's placements within the magazines from local businesses and different, you know, concert promotion and that kind of thing that sort of builds this sense of community through music in Winnipeg.
The magazine has come under the ownership of the CKUW. So could you maybe give us a bit of a background of how that came about and why?
Stylus was owned and published with the University of Winnipeg Student Association. And then I guess it came to light that they weren't necessarily seeing all the value in the magazine that people at the radio station and the music community would see.
You know, we worked really hard to try and convince them otherwise, but they simply refused to listen to any arguments from the campus or the community about the history of the magazine, its connection to the students, to the campus. And so they just pursued their agenda to cut it and basically demanded that CKUW take it over.
What do you think would have happened had CKUW not taken an owner over in that context?
Well, it certainly would have been shut down. I mean, there's, you know, the magazine is not profitable. It never has been. It's never, you know, CKUW doesn't run as a for-profit operation. Stylus magazine is a nonprofit cultural product. It doesn't earn the money back by selling ads, and I don't know that it could. You know, it would be very different.
Curious to know about the opportunities and the challenges that come with the radio station owning this publication.
The biggest challenge is just paying for it. Ultimately, taking it on, it increases our expenses at the station by 10%. So that's pretty big because it doesn't increase our revenue by 10%. Mm. I think one thing that's really great is because we have control of the magazine now, we've been sending it out to our donors. So it's a way of connecting the donors to the station. It's a way of letting them know when our program guide changes. It's a way of giving them more in-depth information about the music that they're hearing on the radio station. We're seeing in the digital revolution that everything is multimedia. You know, most of our radio hosts already have blogs or websites, and if they don't, they certainly spend time writing on Facebook. So that multimedia nature of our lives, incorporating that into the radio station and what we do as a community broadcaster, community media production hub, if you will, I think that's obvious, and there's huge benefits there.
Stylus magazine is located at various locations around and near the University of Winnipeg campus. Stylus is also available on the World Wide Web at www.stylusmagazine.ca. From downtown Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Aki and homeland of the Métis peoples, this has been CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUW in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe Aki, homeland of the Métis and the traditional territory of the Nihiwak and the Nakoda.
Music this week was by local performers Mullagrab.
Headlines this week were written by Scott Price of CKUW and Mick Sweetman of CJRU.
We also thank Stefan Doucet and Michael Welch of CKUW, Chloe Barufa of CKUT, and Groundwire coordinator Omni Salma Rahimtula, as well as CKUW's Julian Cooper for the technical assistance in putting together this week's program.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station. Download at groundwire.ncra.ca or find our latest episode on rabble.ca.